Christ in the Crucible. Commentary for the September 24, 2022 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. You, however, know all about my teaching, my way of life, my purpose, faith, patience, love, endurance, persecutions, sufferings. What kinds of things happened to me in Antioch, Iconium, and Lystra, the persecutions I endured. Yet the Lord rescued me from all of them. In fact, everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted, while evildoers and impostors will go from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. 2 Timothy 3, verses 10 through 13. Children can be cruel. They will seize upon the slightest deformity, the difference in a name, or the clothing another child wears, and heckle them incessantly over it. I am ashamed to say that I was no better than some at this, especially during my teen years. We grew up poor, and I compensated for the low self-esteem that caused by belittling others I thought to be worse off than me. While this doubtless made them miserable, it fed my childish ego until I found myself with a fat lip after I picked on the wrong person. What made it worse, they decided to turn the tables and become my incessant tormentor. Since school attendance is mandatory, there is no escape from these scenarios. I deserved my comeuppance, but many of those set upon by other children did not. The popular animated television series The Simpsons often focuses on these dysfunctional schoolyard relationships. Bart Simpson picks on his friend Milhouse and others who are weaker than he is, often to gain the approval of other children stronger than him, preferring to inflict pain on others rather than feel the pain of being assaulted himself. He becomes a proxy bully to his friends. In the program, they are clueless to what is going on and continue to remain friends with Bart, despite the abuse. One gets the feeling that they understand if they were in Bart's shoes, they would do the same. They are resigned to the idea that physical strength is more important than intelligence at that age. Unfortunately, this is bad for the bully, too. Some grow to adulthood, thinking that their physical strength is all they need to get through life. We may read about these grown children in the morning news, arrested for assault, domestic violence, or theft as they try to continue to steal lunch money in the form of shoplifting, burglary, or robbery. My fat lip gave me plenty to think about as I dealt with the challenges of my teen years. Fortunately, through a local church youth group, Christ began to speak into my life. I learned memory verses like, "If your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you." Proverbs 25, verses 21 and 22. In my childish anger over my lot in life, and a desire to get back at those who had better chances, more opportunities than I had, putting burning coals on their heads seemed like justice. But I must admit that I was struggling with the do good to them to make that happen part. Eventually, I learned some of what Jesus said about dealing with violence. "But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also." Matthew 5:39. I admit that part is hard for me. My uncle once told me that for generations, the Terry family has struggled with temper. It has been so bad at times, one of my ancestors was one of the few divorces in the early colonies. I have fared better with two wives who have been willing to live with me. I'm sure Christ's influence in my life had something to do with that. But it has not been without struggle, and difficulties continue to present themselves as evidence that growth continues to be desirable and possible, even at my advanced age. This tells me that God sees in me far more than I see in myself. Knowing that keeps me moving forward. And through the years, I have learned to take his hand and hold it firmly, even when I cannot see the path ahead. One of the most important lessons I have learned is the need to turn any present anxieties and the future over to God. This is especially true when temper begins to rise. He has said, "It is mine to avenge, I will repay," in Deuteronomy 32, verse 35. In other words, God has it all in hand. I do not need to deal with it. I can just walk away assured it will be resolved. Does this mean that God is my enforcer? No. I take it to mean that God is better able to deal with it positively. Where I might be tempted to desire someone's destruction for the slight they intended for me, God is able to reach into their life and give them a future and a hope beyond anything I might envision for them. When that happens, they do die to what they were and become something new, just as I did. God's vengeance is to slay what was by replacing it with something better. He has done this repeatedly for those whom society had no desire to redeem. And he doesn't do this once, and if you fail later, abandon you. He does it repeatedly for each person willing to come to him. The Apostle Peter struggled to grow under Jesus' mentoring. But Jesus never gave up and sent Peter away. He continued to patiently nurture the apostles' nascent faith. And when Jesus had been crucified and rose from the grave, he continued to urge Peter to feed my sheep, John 21, verse 17. The same Peter who cut off the high priest's servant's ear in a bid to defend Jesus from assault, despite all that he had been taught about turning the other cheek, was now to lay aside such weapons and the temper that encouraged their use, and become a vessel for pouring out the love of God for others. His change was powerfully displayed when he was reputed to have met Christ when fleeing Rome and being urged to return to minister in that city. He was ultimately crucified there. While there is no specific archaeological evidence to support this, several of the anti-Nicene church fathers refer to Peter in Rome, and Constantine built the Vatican over the spot where he was suspected to have been martyred, despite the immense difficulty of constructing it at that location, being uneven ground. Why is the influence of Jesus so powerful? Why did it have the power to change my life? Why were so many in the early church so willing to be martyred for their faith, like Peter? This is especially puzzling when we consider modern Christians who consider it a major offense to the faith if the music being played at church is not what they prefer. When they refuse to participate in or support the modern church, it is hard to see them willingly crucified upside down for their faith as Peter was reputed to have done. They are likely not the reason Jesus' influence endures. Instead, it is his life of poverty and struggle that speaks to us in our own struggles. He endured despite the challenges, and not once did he complain about his poverty or the hardships of an itinerant lifestyle. And unlike some ascetics, he also did not seek poverty and hardship to prove how saintly he was. They were not the essence of who he was, but how he dealt with them was. He encouraged those who listened to his Sermon on the Mount to cease worrying about those material things that we all are inclined to chase after, and trust God to provide for us. He said this not because we are more worthy for blessing than anyone else. He said it because God is love and provides for the needs even of those who are evil. God cares for us because of who he is, not who we are. The same flower that bursts forth in all its colorful glory for the saint also does so for the sinner. Nature does not willingly abandon the great underlying principle of unconditional love that produces such beauty. Neither should we. When we are faced with struggle, many see it as a test of our faith. But what if we saw it instead as an opportunity to glorify God's love in the world? Is it possible to ask ourselves when faced with challenge, how can we turn this into God's compassionate and loving glory? At this point, some may be ready to charge into the fray and right what is wrong in the world to prove God's righteousness. He does not ask us to do that. Instead, he asks of us the hardest thing we could possibly have to do in the face of ominous evil. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Exodus 14:14. Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find the written copy of this podcast at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find hundreds more commentaries and podcasts archived at that location for your enjoyment. May God richly bless you and your family.